So the one thing that we all know is we know that Bitcoin is going to do what we know it's going to do. So these companies that are building around it are going to do very well. It's going to be similar to the personal computer revolution or the internet revolution that we all lived through. I'm a hair older than you, but not too much. And, you know, I mean, is Blockstream the Cisco Systems of Bitcoin? You take things like, what's going to happen when Bank of America actually adds Bitcoin one day? What's going to happen? What are they going to do? Are they going to hire three Lightning devs and figure it out? I don't think so. I think they're probably going to make some strategic acquisitions and buy some customers and buy some technology. And we've kind of seeded 40 to 50 companies in the space that are really kind of prime for when Uber does decide to add Bitcoin. What are they going to do? I mean, that's what I'm focused on. I haven't been kind of distracted with the shiny Bitcoin treasury companies. I think it's cool. I think it's interesting and fun, but you know, we stay in our lane here. And by the way, I don't know why the Bitcoin treasury companies aren't putting that in through an Amboss deal and actually generating riskless yield, even if it's 1 to 1.5% on the Lightning network, just routing payments. I mean, imagine if Sailor took that and was actually generating riskless yield by putting some of it to work, right? I think we're going to see a lot of those type of strategies coming too.
Greetings and salutations, my fellow plebs. My name is Walker, and this is the Bitcoin Podcast. Bitcoin continues to make new blocks every 10 minutes, and the value of one Bitcoin is still one Bitcoin. If you are listening to this right now, remember, you're still early. This episode is brought to you by Blockware. What if you could lower your tax bill and stack Bitcoin at the same time? Well, with Blockware, you can. New U.S. tax rules let miners write off 100% of their mining hardware in a single year. So earn Bitcoin daily while saving big come tax season. Get started at mining.blockwaresolutions.com/titcoin. Use the code TITCOIN to get $100 off your first miner when using the Blockware marketplace. This is not tax advice, so go speak to the team at Blockware to learn more. That's mining.blockwaresolutions.com/titcoin. Head to the show notes for links to find the show on centralized social media platforms and on Noster, or just go directly to bitcoinpodcast.net. You'll find it all there. And kind reminder that you can support this show by becoming a paid subscriber on Fountain. Or don't, Bitcoin doesn't care, but I sure do appreciate it. Without further ado, let's get into this Bitcoin talk. Muzzman, what's going on? Welcome back. It's been, the last time you were on here, it's been like well over a year. You were a pretty early guest actually on this podcast.
I was honored because you had me on early and you had no viewers. So that was good.
You know, it's you got to start somewhere. People don't realize the grind of building out a Bitcoin podcast. Like it turns out it's even though you're talking about what many of us would argue is the most important topic in the world, which is fixing the money, it turns out it's hard to get people to pay attention to that when there's so many cat videos and various bar fights and gas station brawls to distract them with. Like people just, it's like pulling teeth to get them to care about sound money. I don't know, man.
So how long has it been now? Cause you really have built it up.
So I think I started it in August of 2023. So it's been over 2 years now, I guess. Time flies. This podcast is older than my son, which is, it's a good marker. You know, I started the podcast like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months before he was born, I think. Because my beautiful wife, Carla, was no longer feeling like editing short form videos, turns out, while she was very pregnant. Who could have seen that coming? So then I was like, what do? You, as a man of a certain age, you got to start a podcast, right?
And your son is almost old enough to now be a guest, right?
He is. I mean, I'm really just trying to bring him up to be my co-host eventually. That would be the goal. Like that's every Bitcoin podcaster's dream, is to have their offspring be their co-host. Actually, you know, Daniel Prince, the Once Bitten podcast, he does this with his daughter. His daughter's been asking the first question on his podcast. I think he's got like over 500 episodes. She's awesome. And she's been asking the first question in that podcast for like 5 years, which is just very cool. What a cool thing to be able to look back on. What an awesome father-daughter activity to be able to do. Bitcoin podcasting is for anyone who's willing to pick up a microphone.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy. His whole family, yeah, and the fact that they, you know, I think you guys will be like that, you know, as your children develop and grow and everything. But just going to the conferences, knowing some of the other kids that are there, just they have such a unique childhood with based parents dragging them to Bitcoin conferences. And can I tell a quick story about his family and his Rakamoto?
Yeah.
So we did one in Prague and I needed somebody to run the door. And we thought, hey, why don't we pay Princey's kids to work the door at the event, and we'll give them, you know, either Bitcoin or, you know, 50 or 100 euros or something. And it's kind of like you're an adult and, you know, you're asking somebody for 20 bucks or 25 euros and you're like taking this thing. You don't want to deal with it. Or maybe 20% of the show's over. You feel bad. You're like, oh, yeah, well, just go on in or whatever. But the kids are ruthless. I mean, the kids were like, every person who came in, both of them was like, 20 euros. We accept Bitcoin, we accept, you know, cash, and we have change, you know, and they were just like so on it. It was like the most profitable Rakamoto. I think we made like 500 euros and we gave them each like 100 because they were just ruthless. And they were asking people, we were joking. I was like, ask people if they're 21, you know, and they're like asking, they're like, are you 21? You have to be 21 to get in here. It was so cute, man. They were so young.
Dude, that's amazing though. Now, you know, just hire kids. To work the doors because
child labor works.
Yeah, it works. And what a great life experience. Like if you can, I mean, you're running front of house, running door security as a kid, like you're going to be set. Like you will know how to handle people going into life. That's a good skill.
And also like on the other side of it, you're in your 30s or 40s, you're paying for two, you got to pull out 40 euros coming from a 12-year-old kid. All right.
Right. Like, you don't want to look bad in front of the kid, right? You want to be like, okay, I've got the fiat. Don't worry, I'm good for it. That's awesome. Yeah, their whole family is fantastic. It's a great example of, I think, what the next generation can look like with great parenting, great life experiences early on, and truly living on a Bitcoin standard. Like, it's gives me a lot. Kids like that give me so much hope for the future to come. Makes me very bullish on humanity.
Yeah, me too. And I love to see that a lot of the conferences, I think the first time that I really noticed it was in Madeira. But I love that the conferences are really kind of starting the kids' corner area, the like kids section, you know, and it's not like they're teaching them, you know, firearm safety. But, you know, it's not exactly like the fiat kids' corner that you would expect on like the Disney cruise or something.
Yeah. I mean, firearm safety could be a good one for you know, different types of conferences. Like, you know, that's – I think I took hunter's safety. How old was I? Like, 10 or 11 maybe? That sounds about right. I mean, I'd been shooting guns for a while before that just because I'm from bumblefuck nowhere, Wisconsin. But I still remember my hunter's safety class. It's useful stuff. Good to be able to know how to handle a firearm no matter what age you are.
Definitely.
And as we're recording this, Muzz, I just got a notification. Bitcoin has just pumped right above 122,000 infinitely printable fiat cuckbucks per coin. You love Uptober being memed into reality. Isn't that just a beautiful thing? It's just like, yep, we're going up. It's Uptober. There's no question about it.
Uptober hits hard.
It's going to be a wild ride. It's going to be a wild ride. Well, hey, stoked to have you back. We got a few things to talk about today. One of the ones we wanted to start with is upcoming pitch competition, because there is a timely component to this. Can you talk about this a little bit? It's going to be happening at Lugano Plan B Forum. I'm going to be there with my lovely wife as well, who everyone really comes to see. But there, you guys are running a pitch competition with the Plan B Network. Tell me about it. I know you're also still accepting entrants to this competition, which is why we're having you on today to be able to talk about this and see if we can drum up some more people who want to pitch this thing.
Yeah, sure. And I don't know if you have a couple of links there, if you were going to do a screen share over my rambling. But yes, we're super excited about it. And we've helped organize a few pitch contests in the past. If the first BTC Prague had a great pitch contest, and you know, the Bitcoin conferences used to do that whole industry day pitch contest thing. They haven't done that at the last event or so, but this is a lot of fun, and I'm helping Giacomo, who I thought was going to be here today, but you know, Giacomo kind of spearheaded it, and it's Cypher Tank. It's kind of a play on Shark Tank, which everyone loves Shark Tank, but it's Bitcoin focused. So Plan B Fund, Tether, everyone over there is sponsoring this event and putting it on as the first. It's definitely a trial run. And it's a lot of fun, and submissions are open, and some pretty good prizes, all things considered. It's not like you have to be incorporated. You don't have to have a certain level of funding. It's just all builders, all ideas. You know, this isn't a pre-accelerator. This isn't a hackathon, but if you have something that you're working on, submit it. Why not? And it's really cool too, because there's two tracks. There's a for-profit track and then the nonprofit track. So different community organizations, people like, you know, maybe Meet Premier Bitcoin, you know, I'm just naming, think of every nonprofit in the Bitcoin space, the educational initiatives, you know, things like Wiser. I'm trying to come up with a few, you know, there's a million. There's like the Tampa Bay Bitcoin people, and then there's the Bitcoin Jungle people and all these other, like, all of that, you know, apply. It's non-dilutive grant money, you know, and they're going to award quite a bit. I mean, it's over 850,000 in prizes. So, yeah. And there's a bunch of the infos here. I mean, it's all we've been talking about on the Lightning Ventures Twitter and my Twitter. And this is a trial run. Okay. So this is going to be filmed, and it's going to be chopped up and aired afterwards. And hopefully it'll be a series of Cypher Tank style events that we can bring to the space. It'll be a lot of fun. We're going to have some killer voiceovers. I don't want to spill the beans on who may be those sexy, recognizable voices that you know from the Bitcoin world. But maybe, you know, maybe a Brit from across the pond, and maybe somebody here with a sexy, deep, raspy voice. But it's going to be chopped up. It's going to look great. It's going to be really cool. Bunch of all-star people are involved. I mean, Adam Back, Paolo is going to be involved. He, you know, his schedule is crazy, but he will be there. A lot of this is confirmed. Odell, Preston, Farrington, Yakes. And the idea of this event, whether you're for profit or not for profit, is that you're getting to obviously pitch in front of these people. You're getting a bunch of exposure. You're getting expenses paid to go to Lugano and the chance to win. But you're also able to kind of negotiate your own deals and additional deals with the, you know, I don't want to call them sharks, right? The honey badgers or whatever they are,
yeah,
with the VCs that are there. So you're not just playing for, you know, the sponsored prize funds that are going to be distributed, but you might walk away with another, you might find even a lead investor that's there or lead to other things. So there's just so much good that can come from it. I mean, everyone I know that's got a little nonprofit thing, that I'm just really encouraging everyone to apply, because, you know, you never know what can happen.
I think this is awesome. Ahead. And just, I was just going to maybe just read through this for anybody who's listening on the audio, because I'm sharing this in the screen, but 8 for-profit projects will be selected to come to Lugano for recording, 2 from each Plan B VC fund category. So you've got on-chain Bitcoin tech, so that's cold storage, that's mining, financialization, et cetera, Lightning, Liquid, and RGB tech, so payment, scalability, asset protocols, privacy, programmability, et cetera, peer-to-peer tech, decentralized identity, data transmission, storage, elaboration, et cetera, and emerging markets, everything connected with or contiguous to Bitcoin that can impact emerging markets. And then 3 nonprofit categories: human rights protection, privacy, censorship resistance, scientific breakthroughs, cryptography, distributed systems, Lugano Bitcoin Citadel, everything connected with or contiguous to Bitcoin that can impact the local scene. So there's a lot of different angles there, which is kind of cool. Like, I don't see any podcasting categories, which is a little bit... I'm a little bit disappointed, but okay, I guess, you know, maybe in the future. We're just not there yet in the adoption cycle. What if you could lower your tax bill and stack Bitcoin at the same time? Well, by mining Bitcoin with Blockware, you can. New tax guidelines from the Big Beautiful Bill allow American miners to write off 100% of the cost of their mining hardware in a single tax year. That is right, a 100% write-off. So If you have $100,000 in capital gains or income, you can purchase $100,000 worth of miners and offset it entirely. Blockware's mining as a service enables you to start mining right now without lifting a finger. Blockware handles everything from securing the miners to sourcing low-cost power to configuring the mining pool. They do it all. You get to stack Bitcoin at a discount every single day, while also saving big come tax season. Get started today by going to mining.blockwaresolutions.com/titcoin. Again, that's mining.blockwaresolutions.com/titcoin. Use the code titcoin to get $100 off your first miner when using the Blockware marketplace. Of course, none of this is tax advice from me. Go speak with the team at Blockware to learn more. One more time, that is mining.blockwaresolutions.com/titcoin.
Yeah, you know, but those orange-pilling nonprofits that are out there, or things like, what's that game for the kids? Shamari. Is it Shamari?
Yeah.
You know, I've seen like those type of projects. You know, why wouldn't you want to apply to do that? You're doing good work. You're spreading Bitcoin education to kids and people. These tracks and categories, these categories were actually listed on Plan B's fund's website. This was their direction. I didn't pick these. This wasn't like for, you know, the Giacomo and myself chose the categories. Personally, I would rather not have the categories. Because when you have the categories, just open, you have to fill them, right? And it's cool to say these are what we're looking for, but it will be two from each. They'll get flown out to Lugano. It basically lasts a week. There's the semifinals, and then of course the Lugano week, which will be great. I think you're going too. You're going to be there, right?
Yeah, maybe we'll be there. Yes. We're emceeing. Yeah,
nice. And then the finals, and then that'll be it. So it's a lot of fun, and we're, you know, grassroots doing all we can to promote it and get the word out there. It's we're doing all we can. We're trying our best, but submissions I think will be open till definitely October 7th, and I think we got word that we can extend it to maybe October 10th. But, you know, it's okay, a lot of plane flights and accommodations that we got to book for the winners and all that stuff. So we can't push it too far, but we want to get as many submissions as possible.
Yeah. And for anybody who's listening there, planbweek.com, and then just go and look for the Cypher Tank on there. And, you know, I would hope that next year maybe there will be a Bitcoin podcasting category, because we need more Bitcoin podcasts. We need to be funding really creative implementations of Bitcoin podcasts. I think I'll have to, you know, maybe I'm going to have to do like a meta pitch to be able to get Bitcoin podcasting accepted into future pitch competitions. Who knows? We got to be supporting our Bitcoin podcasters, you know?
Well, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of, you know, a portfolio company and good friends and all. The name we know and love is Geyser, right? And
yeah.
From the VC land, and that's why this pitch contest, one of the reasons why I actually really like doing this and getting involved, besides all the money that this brings us, right? Because we all know that I'm motivated by money here, is that, you know, we get a lot of inbound of like, hey, I'm working on this really cool movie. Like, we're going to, you know, educate people on mining. Like, I'm working on this Broadway play, elaborate Satoshi story kind of thing. All of those type of projects are not really VC fundable, right? You don't invest in movies. You don't invest in entertainment things. It's just not something that is really appropriate for VC funding. So usually I like to send them to Geyser, you know, and those type of things like podcasts or the Bitcoin racing car. And these type of things, right? Those type of initiatives, it's great to have on Geyser. I was going to ask you if you ever had a campaign up there or had any success there. But specifically for this type of event, I'm reaching back out to all those people that are creating awareness. And the Coach Carbon with his like the football soccer kids that he kind of does. And all of these like really cool things that are Bitcoin adjacent and nonprofits and good good-natured things can apply for this and maybe walk away with some cashola. So what are your thoughts on Geyser? Have you ever fired up a campaign?
I have. I mean, honestly, I have one for the Bitcoin podcast that I started. I started a while ago. I just went on there. It has raised 40,256 sats. granted, I haven't really promoted it like at all. But yeah, it's, let's see, geyser.fund/project/titcoin. It has, yeah. So, you know, cause that's the other thing. It's Geyser is, I honestly really like Geyser. I think it's a great solution for people to be able to fundraise. And especially if you're trying to incorporate some, let's say, value for value, or, you know, there's I know there's a lot of other creative ways you could use Geyser too. You could, I mean, you could honestly probably use it as a way to like sell, you know, pleb sponsorships, let's say, you know, roll some credits with your Geyser fund pleb sponsors on there. But honestly, Geyser's fantastic. I think that we need more people using these sort of Bitcoin native funding mechanisms for these sorts of projects. Cause that's the thing you realize is that, I mean, I've donated to, probably like a couple, at least like a dozen, I'd say, different projects on Geyser just randomly over the years, because it's great to be able to fund things you want to see in the world. Right. And you can do it with Bitcoin. And like, that just, I don't know, it feels good. Even if it's just a few sats, like it makes a difference.
Especially when it's something that you know and love, right? Like I remember I donated to No BS Bitcoin. You remember that daily newsletter? I loved that newsletter that came out every day. You know, it was definitely one that I read. But your Geyser campaign, you know, you've gotten over 40,000 sats, and you know one day that'll buy you a new Tesla. You just got to wait a little bit. But, you know, the thing with Geyser is, since it is kind of, we're in a new novel, you know, area with Bitcoin, and that you don't have like the exposure of like the Indiegogo and the Kickstarter, where you're just getting hundreds of thousands of eyeballs, but they also take a much larger fee. So the thing with Geyser and those type of campaigns is you have to really promote them. And I was actually amazed by your signature page the other day, because you had like 50 different links of like, here's this. And I'm like, man, I'm like, he's got everything in this. And I'm clicking around and I'm clicking around. I end up on the link tree and I don't see support my work where it opens to Geyser. So that might be something you want to think about.
You know, you are absolutely right. See, Muzz, this is why I bring you on. It's for the advice on how to grow Bitcoin podcasts. You know,
really?
It is interesting that like we did see, you know, you mentioned like, okay, podcasts are not like a VC investable thing, which like makes sense. I'm also not a VC, so I don't understand the intricacies of this. But what is interesting, we did see a podcast get acquired by a publicly traded company this cycle. The MSTR True North podcast got acquired by Strive, right? I think it was Strive that acquired them. Like that's a wild kind of shift. Like that's not just sponsoring a podcast, that's saying we're actually going to buy out a podcast. I mean, like, I don't know. That was, to me, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like my podcast is not for sale, but that was an interesting, that was a very interesting development. At least I thought. I just hadn't like thought about it in that regard, I guess, but it makes sense. It's just ultimately, what is a podcast? It's like, it's a media business, right?
It's a media business. And, you know, that was a really interesting, I don't know if you want to call it an acquisition, right? I love that show. Everyone loves that show. But, you know, sold for a dollar. Who knows what the real sort of acqui-hire, sure, and what they're getting paid. But it's great if you're looking to start a media arm or brand something. You know, I mean, one of the people who always did it the best, whatever you think, is Swan. You know, Swan really did marketing so well with their podcasts and their content and all the stuff that they created. A lot of those other Bitcoin-only exchanges kind of looked to them for a lot of advice, right? Like Relay and 21 Things About Bitcoin and all these PDFs and materials. I mean, Swan was the leader in all that, you know? And you swallow up a couple of these podcasts and it's really a nice little media department. And you said you're not for sale, but I happen to know that everything is for sale, Walker. Everything has a price, okay?
That's fair, but boy, I don't know what my price would be. You know, it would need to be a lot, because the nice thing about this podcast is like, I do this without the expectation that I will make money on it. I do it because like I have my fiat job. That's how I pay the bills and whatnot, and that's how I stack sats. If I end up making some sats from the podcast, that's great. But my ultimate goal is like, I want a Bitcoin podcast, because I think, you know, Bitcoin podcasting is the most important job in the world, and we need more Bitcoin podcasters. So really the point of my podcast is to inspire other Bitcoin podcasts. Let 1,000 Bitcoin podcasts bloom. We need to eviscerate the TradFi podcast market and completely supplant it with the Bitcoin podcast ecosystem. This is my mission, you know, this is my mission in life.
Well, I'd love to talk about those type of things and even acquisitions in general, because, you know, thankfully things are finally starting to heat up, both within our own portfolio at Lightning Ventures, my own psychotic angel investing portfolio, and things like this acquisition with Strive and MSTR. And I would not be surprised in this bull market if you didn't get some very interesting inbound offers in. And, you know, really, it's like, what does it cost? I don't want to sell it, right? I love, Nico from Simply. You know, he's built a monster over there with other things, yeah. You know, but you think about, like, what are you selling? Like, you're not selling out, right? I come from a music background. It's like, you're a sellout, man. You went to the major label and you did this and that. And, you know, what you're doing is like, you're a one-man show, right? Or maybe a one-and-a-half-man show. Instead of dealing with the clips and dealing with all of that stuff and dealing with landing sponsors, right? And by the way, Walker needs some sponsors right now, okay? If you want a good show to sponsor, reach out to him, darn it. Tell him promo code Muzz and
give you some kickbacks in the back end. No, it is. Nico has built a heck of an empire over there. Like, it's super impressive. I mean, between Nico, BDC Sessions, like those in my mind are like, those are very just impressive in their scope. Also, like Natalie Brunell, I mean, her podcast actually makes it into mainstream financial news charts, you know, like that's a different, like, obviously very different styles of shows, from like Natalie's to like a Simply to even a Sessions. But it's impressive, like, to be able to get the Bitcoin message into more of those mainstreams. So you're showing up on the Spotify or Apple podcast charts for, you know, finance and investing or whatever. Like, you're getting added to those lists. That's like, that's super impressive. And honestly, it's like, we need more reaching outside of the echo chamber. It's talking within the echo chamber is cool too, but obviously, like, we want as many people to be onboarded to Bitcoin as possible because we believe that it's going to be beneficial for them to do so. And so it's like, anytime you can reach outside there, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, those are staples for getting into Bitcoin. You know, my mom has known about Bitcoin from a distance, but, you know, she finally got in. She came to Vegas for the conference there. I'm not sure if she came more for the conference that I invited her, or if she just loves Vegas. But she's one of the few people that just loves that place. We all hate it, right? But, you know, getting her into it, right? What's very digestible, easy content. It's like, here's a couple of, you know, get to know you videos from Natalie Brunell. I sent it to her and it's just so cute watching her. She pulls out her little Samsung Notes app and she's like, I want to meet Natalie Brunell. How do I do that? And I'm like, well, there's a woman's brunch event. Let's get you a ticket, you know? And I actually took her picture with Natalie Brunell. I thought it was like so funny, you know?
That's amazing. No, that is like, because that's the thing. You realize that you never know what type of podcaster, creator, personality, whatever, is going to really speak to any particular person. But like me or Nico, for example, we may not be as appealing to learn about Bitcoin from for your mom as Natalie Brunell is. And that's great. That's why we need, like, you need true, like, actual diversity, not like DEI diversity, but just genuine diversity of Bitcoin podcasts, because you never know what's going to appeal to a particular person. But your mom, I imagine that she was over the moon to get her picture with Natalie.
Yeah, she was. She got a few, but it was so funny. She was taking notes on her phone and everything. But, like, you know, you find out what works for each person, right? And, you know, hey, first thing I sent her was a Michael Saylor clip. And in that clip, Saylor's like, sell your kidney, mortgage your house, sell everything you have, go into debt, buy more Bitcoin. And she was like, I don't know about this, right? And then it's like, okay, let's dial it back. And then, you know, right before the conference, she's like, Michael Saylor? She's like, is that the same Michael Saylor from my retirement account? I'm like, that's the one. That's the one, Mom. Let's go. And she had this notepad and she was like, oh, Michael, I want to ask you, do you know Katie the Russian? I saw like a notepad and my mom had written like Katie the Russian. She was like, she was talking about, she saw the family's one. You were on that panel, weren't you?
Oh, nice. Yeah.
You were on that. Yeah. She picked it. I picked that out. I'm like, I think this will be cool. You know, and she really liked it.
Dude, I love to hear it. You know, again, we need diversity of content to bring people in. And I like shifting, because I could talk about Bitcoin podcasts all day, but I do want to talk about Bitcoin companies more specifically a little bit. So You also personally, obviously through Lightning Ventures as well, invest in a lot of different Bitcoin startups. And right now, Bitcoin treasury companies, you know, publicly traded companies have really been the hot topic, you know, paper Bitcoin summer. That's what people have been focused on. But in the background and throughout all of the bear market and everything else, there's been a lot of actual building happening for not Bitcoin treasury companies, but Bitcoin companies that also happen to have Bitcoin treasuries, because of course they will. They're, you know, they're Bitcoin companies. They're creating Bitcoin products. Can we talk a little bit about maybe some of the companies in your portfolio, what you look at from Lightning Ventures in terms of like, what is your, you know, what is your investment thesis and how do you actually make these decisions? Cause I know you, you know, like you guys versus Ego Death versus some of these others, like you've all got kind of slightly different, but maybe, you know, Bitcoin is the through line in these investment theses. But talk about that a little bit. What, where are you guys at? What are you guys looking for? What are you guys most excited about right now?
Yeah. So, you know, as far as what you're talking about, paper Bitcoin and all of that stuff, markets are fascinating. I love markets just as a hobby. You know, you can tell I have, you know, my MBA from, you know, Cornell. But just learning what everything I've learned on my own. And it's just so fun to watch the phases, okay? And you have, there was a point in time where everyone wanted to invest in Bitcoin startups and companies. These are real businesses. There's no tokens here. This isn't any sort of, but that was, the markets were hot. It was a very hot market and a lot of people were investing, especially in our Lightning Venture Syndicate and others. They raised a lot of funds and then things really hit the fan. And then there was this flavor of ordinals, right, where there was a lot of people that were getting into art on Bitcoin, art on chain, Bitcoin culture. You know, I once had somebody told me I sold all my Bitcoin. I bought all ordinals because I think it's all about Bitcoin culture. I said, I want everyone to win and good luck to you. But that is not for me. So then there was that. And there were these other things, right? There was runes and, you know, whatever other things that there were. OK, and then it came to Bitcoin treasuries, which is great. I would rather have that be the primary driver of this cycle than, say, the altcoin ICO kind of boom bust thing, right? At least these are companies, many publicly traded, that are adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet, you know, as a reserve asset. Some of them with the sole purpose of acquiring more Bitcoin is the company. That's a whole nother thing. But that's the flavor, right? And everyone wants that. And there's a million things that are very good about Bitcoin treasury companies, or even just you having some Bitcoin treasury companies in your interactive broker's portfolio and what you can do with that, right? Because you could margin against it and you could use other tools in the tool belt with options that are easy for a U.S. person who can't use Deribit and other things like that. You know, there's more tools in your tool belt to have even just a little part of it in some of these, even iBit or one of these ETFs. And now what you're seeing, which is great, because the Bitcoin treasury companies are way out of favor, right? It's like almost everyone turned their back. MicroStrategy was underperforming, you know? All of these, you know, every other day, there's a Bitcoin treasury company in Africa, in the UK, and here and there. And, you know, and it doesn't seem like they're getting the real stretched valuations, MNAVs, and all the things they were getting before. They kind of fell out of flavor. But now it's really fun and interesting to see that cold storage Bitcoin is in, right? Cold storage Bitcoin is what people want. Everyone that was out there before, and how do I, you know, take a loan against this and invest in startups? And that's okay. No, I'm going to buy a bunch of these JPEGs and I'm going to do whatever. And it's, oh, I'm going to go into these Bitcoin treasury companies, man, this is the future. And now they're just like, fuck everything. Send it to the cold storage at home. And it's just really cool to see the psychology of people go through these waves. And trust me, all of those things are going to have their day again. It's always a cycle. And I'm fascinated by it. I think it's just so cool to see that flip around. We haven't diverted from that, because what we do is we invest in Bitcoin startups and companies and private markets and opportunities that are building on, around, or with Bitcoin and the future of infrastructure, on-ramps, off-ramps, exchanges. You know, Bitcoin's everywhere now. There's Bitcoin in art, you know, Scarce City. They do all the cool art galleries at the conferences, portfolio company, love them. You know, they're a 100% Bitcoin business. Or, you know, healthcare, things like crowd health. I think crowd health did get rid of that Bitcoin element, but you know, it was entering into healthcare, energy, how people are paying their electric bill via Lightning Network and paper usage and things that are, you know, happening outside on-ramps, off-ramps, the debit cards, the TradFi stuff, advertising technology, you know, rewards and all of these things. It's just, there's just so much going on. So the one thing that we all know is we know that Bitcoin is going to do what we know it's going to do. So these companies that are building around it are going to do very well. It's going to be similar to the personal computer revolution or the internet revolution that we all lived through. I'm a hair older than you, but not too much. And, you know, I mean, is Blockstream the Cisco Systems of Bitcoin? You take things like, what's going to happen when Bank of America actually adds Bitcoin one day? What's going to happen? What are they going to do? Are they going to hire three Lightning devs and figure it out? I don't think so. I think they're probably going to make some strategic acquisitions and buy some customers and buy some technology. And we've kind of seeded 40 to 50 companies in the space that are really kind of prime for when Uber does decide to add Bitcoin. What are they going to do? So, I mean, that's what I'm focused on. I haven't been kind of distracted with the shiny Bitcoin treasury companies. I think it's cool. I think it's interesting and fun. But, you know, we stay in our lane here, which is, and by the way, I don't know why the Bitcoin treasury companies aren't putting that in through an AMBOSS deal and actually generating riskless yield, even if it's 1 to 1.5% on the Lightning Network, just routing payments. I mean, imagine if Sailor took that and was actually generating riskless yield by putting some of it to work, right? I think we're going to see a lot of those type of strategies coming too.
I think there have been, I'm forgetting, it might have been the B HODL company, the one that just launched in the UK. I think that was part of their kind of general game plan, was not just buy Bitcoin and hold Bitcoin, but also make a return by providing liquidity on the Lightning Network. And so, like, I think that's cool, because there's been this whole kind of debate about, well, do you want a, you know, some of these businesses have they have their core business, right? Or, you know, what was their core business? Like Strategy as the perfect example. MicroStrategy, and they're still MicroStrategy, they have that core, you know, business intelligence, business analytics business. Now that is obviously a super small relative piece of their pie, but it's still cash flow on their side, right? But then this, okay, is that better, or is the pure play Bitcoin treasury company better, where all they do is just, raising to buy more Bitcoin, right? And to me, it's like, it seems like the ultimate best thing to have. And again, I'm no genius about this stuff, but just like gut feeling is like, you'd want to have a business that is accumulating Bitcoin for its Bitcoin treasury through whatever fiat vehicles it can on public markets, but then also has some sort of a core business that is actually related to Bitcoin as a technology, that is related to these secondary layers, that is somehow providing services to this, you know, that's a mutually beneficial thing, right? You're stacking Bitcoin because obviously, but also you want to be part of this ecosystem. If there's ways for you to make money within this ecosystem that ultimately then benefits the value of your Bitcoin holdings, like, that just seems like a win-win to me. So, I mean, do you think we start to see, I guess, like, is the current kind of pure play treasury, Bitcoin treasury companies, do you think just sort of an intermediary step between a lot of these maybe smaller Bitcoin startups starting to get acquired by these public vehicles that are already public, that are, you know, already publicly traded, like starting to snap up some of these startups that say, okay, well, we want to have a Bitcoin business. As you said, it's like, it's easier to acquire one than it is to build one up from scratch. Is that kind of your thesis for where some of this is going? In addition to, like, maybe the Banks of America's or the JP Morgan's trying to acquire some of these things, where do you think we head there?
The Bitcoin treasury companies eventually acquiring operating businesses that actually make money in the Bitcoin space. This is something that we've been speculating about. And we had a panel somewhere, I can't remember where, if it was in Helsinki or something, talking about it. But we all kind of think that that's the way that it's going to go for a lot of these companies. I want to talk about the B HODL, because now that that's public, I actually can talk about it. So Coin Corner, is one of our portfolio companies. Love them to death. Amazing team. Legends of Lightning, Bolt Cards, everything that they've done. They've been around for over 10 years, by the way, in the tiny part of Isle of Man, where they're based out of. Monster of a company. Really fucking cool. So they were actually behind that BHODL ETF. And while it's not them, okay, it's not them, so to speak, they're doing all the buys and sells for acquiring on that. And then they are the ones actually responsible for putting the Bitcoin to work to generate some of that yield. They're like legends, and they're doing it themselves in-house. And I think that a lot of these companies, these ETFs, will want to acquire cash flow positive Bitcoin businesses to their benefit, right? Because they're mining sats all day long with what they're doing. And I don't know how it's sustainable, you know, long term. That ETF, you know, that's like a partnership for Coin Corner, right? Which is
wait,
great.
BHODL is not it's not an ETF, is it?
I think so, isn't it? The UK launched one that just happened.
I thought it was still like I didn't think it was technically an ETF. I could be wrong on this. You're probably more dialed in than I am. I thought it was still like a typical Bitcoin treasury company.
Okay. All right. You're right.
With the operating business.
You're right. So it's not an ETF. I'm sorry. It is a treasury company that has aligned themselves with, you know, Coin Corner and is out to get some yield on the Lightning Network and whatever. But yeah, I think that a lot of these companies are going to make some of those acquisitions. I think it's just a matter of time. You know, we just had our first acquisition in our portfolio for Slice. You know, Slice was acquired as a part of the whole the team that basically created Fold, that spun out Fold. They're called Thesis. You know, they acquired Lolly, they acquired Slice, and they're going after Bitcoin rewards. They want to take a piece of the Bitcoin rewards market, you know. So while that wasn't like a 3,000x return, because it did happen rather quickly in the life cycle of the company, it's a good sign. And we're starting to see a lot of life come back to the public markets with IPOs, however they're performing, right? Gemini, I know we're not talking Bitcoin only here, but Gemini and Bullish going public, and there's a bunch on deck, and I think Kraken's going to go here pretty soon. And I just think that we're going to start seeing some acquisitions and consolidation in the space.
In terms of, like, I guess generally the from like on the technical side, in terms of what sort of technical solutions you think are, or technical products, technical services that you guys are looking at that you think are going to be kind of really hot. Because you mentioned sort of the cyclical nature of a lot of these things. Obviously, you guys have a huge focus on like Lightning, on payments, on things that are built, you know, on and around kind of these layer twos. Is that where you really see kind of this next, wave of both growth in companies, but also from like the user adoption standpoint, that like kind of this bridging between what people are used to, whether it be various rewards or things like that, but bridging kind of some of these familiar topics, these familiar products and services, but doing it on a Bitcoin standard, basically. Is that where you guys are kind of seeing this evolving in terms of just like, let's say, actual retail user adoption of Bitcoin and how like that's actually going to, like, what does that actually look like for the people that are going to be using this? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that all of these things play an important part. The ETFs and those type of plays make it very easy for Aunt Mary and Uncle Bob to log into their Fidelity account and buy iBit or whatever they want and have some exposure to the price. They're not using Bitcoin, right? And then it leads to, hopefully there isn't like a big blow up that makes everyone second guess everything that's going on with custody and realizing that, you know, there's another way to basically actually use their Bitcoin. But getting people, like, as far as the tech frontier and things that, you know, we're looking at or excited about, I mean, everyone's talking about Arc. You know, we just missed a deal for Arc. It was a pretty big deal. Everyone's talking about Arc. I mean, everyone in TradFi land, you know, Vlad from Robinhood, I mean, if the guy, every other word he says is tokenization, okay? Every other thing he says is tokenization. Okay, the world is going to be tokenized. And yesterday, actually, the SEC just put forth a framework for tokenizing stocks to trade 24/7. Okay. And that's the SEC putting it forward. So like, this is definitely coming. The question is, will all this stuff come to Bitcoin? Because what I've been saying for the last 10 years is anything that matters will eventually be done on Bitcoin. You know, it's, you know, ordinals, you know, NFTs were created by Bitcoin. You know what I mean? The first big NFTs were done on Bitcoin. It's just, it's too busy like solving all the world's problems, like you're saying. So will the tokenization race win? Will Liquid win? Okay, when it comes time to, I hate the real world asset thing that people, the RWA, whatever they say, but like, yeah. What's going to happen? Are they going to go to a bunch of crypto things? Is everyone going to go? Is that going to come to Bitcoin? I can't wait to see, because the tokenization of even our investments, you know, if you invested if you invested a few thousand dollars into a startup through Lightning Ventures, that's done right now in a completely traditional way, with DocuSign, and there's really no liquidity until an event happens. But what if we could tokenize your few thousand dollar investment, not tokenize it, right? But you know what I mean, like give you a token and then be able to create some sort of like bulletin board, some sort of even private way for you to interact with another, you know, accredited, cleared investor. And get some liquidity by that, because for these things to happen in the traditional VC land, like it's a lot of work to go to a secondary market, and there's a right of first refusal, and then the board has to approve it, all of these other things. And that's really exciting, because you might be willing to invest in more Bitcoin startups if you knew that you had options for liquidity, right? That were easier than the current model. So you've got like the Vlad from Robinhood, you know, he's tokenizing OpenAI, which is really pissing off Sam Altman. He doesn't want his shares tokenized. But traditionally, that was never done. So it's kind of exciting. And I want to see all of that come to Bitcoin. I want to see all of that just eat the world for that. Are meme coins going to come to Bitcoin? I don't even know if they're there already, you know, but it seems like a lot of people use Solana. Like Solana is where your shit garbage, the mouth of where all shit meme coins spur from. Is that going to come to Bitcoin? I don't know. I don't know if all of this is going to end up on Bitcoin.
Well, so let me ask you about that, because I think there's already like shit coins on Bitcoin with like the BRC20s or whatever.
Are those still around?
I have no idea. I don't know if people are still launched them or not. I know there was like that kind of initial spurt of them. I don't know if that's died out. Honestly, I don't pay attention to that side of things really at all. But like about the tokenization specifically, because this is something that gets thrown around as like kind of a buzzword. You know, we're going to put X on the blockchain. Like it's almost like this trope at this point, or like this, you know, it's this cliche, I should say. Is this something that you think? And even, you know, Larry Fink has talked about this stuff a lot. Everybody's talked about this, you know, tokenization, like you said, tokenization of real world assets or of, you know, securities markets, whatever it might be. Is this something that you think that Bitcoin is actually needed for? Or can this sort of tokenization, like, do you just need a centralized database for it? Like, because that's where I come with so much of this stuff. It's like, do you really need to put it, quote, on the blockchain? Like, does that actually deliver? Does that actually do anything beneficial? Or is that just the buzzword and really... you just need an efficient, centrally controlled database for what this is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it goes back to basically the same argument or debate that's been happening since the 2013 when the first first altcoins started coming, is that, you know, most of what you need does not need a token. It doesn't need a blockchain. And a lot of this is actually just misuse of the word blockchain. I think that there are some very good use cases, right? And I definitely want to name a few, but like, what's not a good use case? They just misuse the word. Okay. So when people say things like, your house, the deed to your house is going to be on a blockchain. If I lose the password, the backup phrase, the whatever, my house would be 100% irretrievable. Okay. That's a blockchain. That's how a blockchain works, right? So that's not a blockchain. That would be, hey, you know, we're going to eliminate red tape. There's going to be efficiencies. There's going to be a token that represents your house, but that's not a blockchain. That's just a way to ease, 300 pages of paper and red tape and all sorts of things. It creates more efficiency in that. Your medical records, everyone, your medical records are going to be on a blockchain. Well, if I lose that and my medical records are gone forever, that's never going to happen because people can't save my life after I get hit by the car. So that's not a blockchain. Would it be easy for me to biometrically send some sort of token thing to a doctor and give my permission and here's all my medical records in a way where we don't have people on the phone in the back and the fax is coming in and all the ways that like I had a history in the medical industry, like it's absolutely archaic. It's from another century what they do. Sure, that would be really cool, right? That would be really cool, but that is not a blockchain, you know. Or hey, we're gonna do supply chain and you know the bucket of Coca-Cola is gonna go on here and there and block. That's like not a blockchain. That's just a better QR code, right? That's a centralized database, just like what you said. And most things need that. But there are things that would be really great, right? Like what about certificate of authenticity? You know, I've got the Mickey Mantle baseball. And instead of the little piece of paper, I can also have the piece of paper too, but I have something that represents that, something that can't be copied, can't be whatever. And if I lose that, tough shit, okay? Because it's not my medical records and it's not the deed to my home, but fuck, you know what I mean? Like, I need that. I'm not going to lose it. You know, so there are certain things that are kind of maybe interesting to think about. And I think that the tokenizing of the stocks, as long as it's a derivative and it's tracked properly and however they're auditing it and whatever they're doing, I think that's cool. I don't know why stocks don't trade 24/7. If you ask anybody who's over 55 or 60 years old on Wall Street that's been around, they will tell you they hate this. They do not want a 24/7 market. They want things exactly the way that they are right now. It's 9:30 to 4 and holidays are off and Juneteenth is off and we're inventing new holidays. They want it that way. And people just don't. I mean, that it's going to be dead. I mean, you know, and not just degen traders. It's just the world is a news-driven market. Things are happening all the time. And you should be able to hedge or get in and out of a position overnight at 6 p.m. on a Sunday if something happens. So that type of tokenization, I think, is good. And it's a token that represents something, but it's not like if I lose the tokenized Tesla shares, like I don't have an opportunity to lose it. There's no self-custody of the tokenization of my Tesla shares. You know, it's just a way to actually create sort of a new market. And I think that that's cool with a lot of these private market investments, right? If I was going out and raising a fund, and if I was finding an investor for $100,000 and that person was a Bitcoiner, you know, when you invest in a venture fund, you're looking at years, okay, with very, very limited liquidity options. And to be able to bring some of this tokenization efficiency to the LP, GP venture markets to where, hey, you invested $100,000 now. 7 months later, something happens in your life. There's a book value and you have a buyer who wants to give you $140,000. I don't know, with whatever, and you should be able to get in and out of that position and access some of that liquidity. And that's the type of tokenization that I'm excited about. And it has nothing to do with mnemonic seed phrases and cold storage and whatever.
That's what I was kind of getting at. Cause like what you're describing there, it's like, yeah, it makes sense that these things, you should be able to create liquid markets for like any investable vehicle. Right. But you don't need to have, it doesn't need to be on the blockchain. Like you just need literally like, you wouldn't necessarily want it to be either, as you said, because it's like, you don't want to lose your private key. And then that investment is just like locked out forever. It's like, no. What you want is just a much more efficient, like centralized market structure for these types of things that is actually operating like everything else does in the 21st century, not like everything does, you know, did in the 20th century. Like that's the thing. But these, I mean, like it's insane. And just as it relates, like even just like banks, like it's just ridiculous. That you submitted your wire transfer, you know, after close of business today. So you're going to have to wait till we wake up and get into, like, it's insane how archaic so much of this stuff is. Like, I'm so glad that Bitcoin exists. Thank God for Bitcoin. Because every time I have to interact with the fiat system in any meaningful way, which is actually quite often still, it's like every time I'm just like, oh my God, this is just like pulling teeth to get anything done. And like, I want to be able to make transactions at any given time without, you know, needing somebody to approve this or whatever. And so, yeah, I wanted to push on that a little bit because I think that idea of like, you know, put it on the block, like you're not saying tokenize it on the blockchain. you're saying, no, like just create a 24/7 market for this and a liquidity pool that doesn't have anything to do with putting it, quote, on the blockchain. Fair?
Yeah. And when you lose Bitcoin, and I've lost Bitcoin, sadly, not due to an exchange hack or something else, which I've lost plenty of Bitcoin that way as well. However, you know, just losing access to a wallet, okay, that is so unfortunate, okay? And when you think about the social engineering things that happen with SIM swapping, okay, you should be able to have a private key for your telephone number that is only you. There's no other copy. Okay, that is yours. And when you move that from Verizon to T-Mobile or to whatever you do, and you prove ownership, okay, that would could just end all of it. But you know what would be the downside? Is that if you lose that, you will lose access to your phone number, or you will just never be able to move it. You will be a Verizon customer forever because you can't move it, okay? And that's like kind of not that bad. You know, if you think about it, like, is that really the end of the world? Like, it stops so much crime. It stops so many people, right, from doing terrible things. But it comes with risk, right? And that's Bitcoin as well. You know, you're a sovereign individual is everything that we preach forever. But hey, if you lose it, it's gone. And for some reason, I think I don't know why a lot more of that hasn't happened. People need to just accept those risks. So I think those type of innovations are coming.
I want to zoom out a little bit and just talk like more broadly about adoption and just market cycles, because it feels like in my mind, and I haven't been through a lot of Bitcoin cycles, right? I got in 2020 after I've ignored Bitcoin for longer than I've been in Bitcoin. You know, in terms of the first time I heard about it to then when I finally started buying, that period is longer than the period that I've been stacking, which kills me, but like it is what it is. You know, we all get it the price we deserve. But it feels like, from my limited experience here, that we're at this place right now where we've been, like, Bitcoin's been kind of a stable coin, relatively speaking, for a little while. Like, it had an incredible run up, right? And, you know, to breaking over 100K. And then since then, it's, you know, people have been somehow getting bored with the Bitcoin price action, even though it's above 100K, or, you know, you hear Bitcoin crashes to 109,000, like insane things to even say out loud. Where do you think we're at in terms of the cycles? Are you somebody who believes that four-year cycles are really important in Bitcoin, that the halving cycles are really important in Bitcoin? Are you more in the like liquidity cycles? Like, this is actually not to do with the halving as much as it's to do with just like macro liquidity cycles. Is this time different from a cycle perspective? Where are you at right now? What's kind of your thesis as we go into this October, where things seem to be kicking off with a bang already in the first couple of days? How are you looking at this? How are you digesting it?
Man, that's a ton of questions, Walker.
I know. I like to load them up on you.
So, you know, if you go to a traditional Wall Street firm, anyone, bond trader, normal person, Bitcoin going from 120 down to 109 in like, a couple days, right? I mean, sometimes you look at an hourly chart or a daily chart of Bitcoin and you're like, what the fuck? You know, I mean, I dropped $4,000 in an hour, you know, and those type of moves, when you measure it on a percentage basis, there's nothing stable about that. Like, that would scare the crap out of any traditional. You don't get moves like that. Yeah, with some high flying, you know, low cap stocks, some biotech, sometimes you get big moves to the upside and things like that. But those are really big moves. And I think that it's been less volatile than, say, in the past, right? Are we going to have an 80% drop down, to your point about, you know, previous cycles, and what are we going to see this cycle? I don't think that. But every asset in the world goes into a bear market, except government spending, right? That's the only bull market. It's just going to go up forever. But every asset in the world, whatever it is, everything hits a bear market at some point in time, whether it's tech stocks, real estate, anything. We were talking about markets earlier and the psychology of it. And, you know, after you've been around for a while and just kind of followed it, it's kind of fun to watch. It's fun to watch when the real estate market is hot and everything is coming in over the asking price, you know, or when there's flooded with inventory and it's a buyer's market. Bitcoin will have the same thing. The question is, this time around, will it be as deep as a correction? And I don't think so. Okay. Remember, NASDAQ dropped 70%+ with the .com. And you had companies that were just adding .com to their name and just going up, right? I don't think we're in that type of a world with the Bitcoin treasury companies. But I don't know if we're going to have quite as bad of a correction as we had before this time around, because I just believe that there's too many buyers. I mean, I just think there's too many people on the sidelines. I mean, Bitcoin is hitting an escape velocity, whether it's Saudi princes and corporations or, you know, Aunt Mary and Uncle Bob, however they're buying it through their ETFs or whatever they're doing, we're hitting that escape velocity. There's just too many buyers. Okay. But however, is there going to be a catalyst? A catalyst for it. Now, you remember the last cycle. You remember FTX. You remember BlockFi. You remember all these things that happened. I remembered Mt. Gox. I still have a valid Mt. Gox claim that I haven't been paid. Okay. So you have catalysts. You have catalysts for all these things. You have New York Attorney General going after Tether. You have events that kind of that cause it. So if you're kind of thinking in the future, not that you want to doom porn into it, right? Because it's up and to the right forever, right? We're all good. We're going up. It's October. It's Moonvember. It's all that stuff. What could be a catalyst this time around? Do you think that an issue maybe with, I don't know, Coinbase custody? I think they have nine of at least almost all the Bitcoin ETFs and so much of a honeypot with Coinbase custody. I don't know anything. I'm making shit up. We're sitting here talking, BSing, right? Could that cause something? What about, God forbid, right? It's not going to happen, but I'm coming up with things, right? It's fiction. What about North Korea for some reason hacking MicroStrategy's Bitcoin? And, you know, the U.S. government having to get involved and backstop MicroStrategy investors with dollars. And then the U.S. government has to try and retrieve that Bitcoin from North Korea. Okay, what kind of what does that signal? What does that do to the market? And by the way, when the U.S. government gets that Bitcoin back from North Korea, they're going to keep it because now it was part of that whole hack, right? That's a 6102 covertly, right? In this future, right? So you can go down all kinds of sci-fi kind of weird things, but what's going to be the catalyst that busts it? These Bitcoin treasury companies, they're going to sell, right? I mean, eventually you have to manage your risk. You have to pay bills. There's a time to scale into Bitcoin. There's the DCA in, and then there's the DCA out. Nobody talks to the DCA out. If we're at 180,000 Bitcoin price, is there anything wrong with setting a DCA out to pay some bills every week and just kind of I don't see that crashing the market. But there has to be a catalyst for this next wave down. Is it World War III? Is it China and Russia versus the world? Is there something there, right? Because Bitcoin does not like war. It should. It should love it war, should. But it doesn't. Is it the cyber threats? They're all conditioning us. Everything you watch on TV, right, is all about the cyber threat, the cyber threat. The internet's down. Everything's down. Teslas are crashing into each other. No ATMs. That's not going to be good for Bitcoin. You're going to have bigger problems, right? We're going to have bigger problems than Bitcoin at that point in time. But what could be the catalyst? I don't think that we're going to have quite as deep, but it all depends on the catalyst to me. I mean, the four-year cycle, I think we have time. And this four-year cycle broke it. Remember, we made a new all-time high before the halving. That never happened before. Right. So I don't know.
Nobody has a crystal ball, right? But it's fun. It's fun to speculate on this. And we are entering this time of kind of, I mean, I suppose everyone probably thinks that the time that they're living through is full of, you know, unprecedented turmoil and change. Maybe that's just a part of being human. But boy, there seems to be a lot of stuff converging right now. And it'll be interesting. Like, I guess the big question is, like, we know Bitcoin will probably have a significant pullback at some point just because, like, there's still so many whales out there with, like, amounts of Bitcoin that I can't even fathom, thousands and thousands of Bitcoin. We saw one of these whales unloading, what was it, like 80,000 Bitcoin? I mean, like, what? Like, that just, like, that's insane. You know, a couple other whales with a few tens of thousands. Like, that's nuts. And actually, the market pretty much soaked that up, right? Like, that's an incredible thing, too, because we do have a ton of buy-side demand, obviously. But those whales are out there. and they can shift large amounts of capital very quickly. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. As for me, it's like, I'm going to keep dollar cost averaging. I'm going to, when Bitcoin takes a little bit of a dip, I do a couple smash buys there. And just keep trying to podcast and create value. And that's the playbook.
And hang out with your amazing, fantastic wife and raise your beautiful son and love life.
Touch grass, you know?
Touch grass, man.
Just, yeah, live life. Go hang out at some Bitcoin conferences and just have a good time with it. One thing I wanted to talk to you about also, this is kind of going back to a more, let's say, technical side, as it relates to the Lightning Network specifically. I've seen a lot of stuff recently, and not just recently, but generally it just seems to be popping up more recently, about people talking about, okay, like the Lightning Network, it really only works in a meaningful way from a custodial standpoint. I've seen this argument being made a lot. Obviously, a lot of the companies that you are investing in, they're you know, either like providing some sort of custodial Lightning service or utilizing custodial services. Is that where you're at too? Like for you, and you mentioned some of these other protocols like Arc, these other layers. How are you looking at this in terms of, is the Lightning Network something that you think is really better geared towards these custodial type services? Like that's where you're, it's obviously where you're going to get the best user experience, because having using a custodial service that has massive fat channels open with other custodial services is going to, like, you're going to have more liquidity, right? Than if you're opening your own channels. Like I know this from having my own channels open. What's your read on that? Does that at all impact like the investment thesis? Has, quote, Lightning failed if it doesn't, if it's primarily used custodially, or is that irrelevant in your opinion?
Completely irrelevant. But you have all these, like, it would be a great infographic. You have all these clusters of people. You have some that will say self-custodial Lightning, it's the only way. It's easy and it works perfectly. And I just tested, actually every Bitcoin Lightning wallet that I could, probably about a month and a half ago. I spent an entire weekend. I did so much testing, and every non-custodial wallet had failed payments. Every single one. Every one. And it's nothing wrong. It's just, it's not easy. And I can open channels and I can pay the fees and I can do whatever they want. And no matter what I seem to do, it just, there's failed payments. And with the custodial wallets, something like Speed or Blink, I never have failed payment. Maybe ever. I mean, and I'm talking beefy payments, man. 5 million sats, 6 million sats, and not having a failed payment. That's wild. So, there are people, and I'm not saying that it's broken, and to each his own. And by the way, the non-custodial Lightning wallets are crazy expensive to use. The Bitcoin wallets in general have upped their fees all the way around, and good for them if they can get it. But even someone like River, to make a Lightning transaction, I mean, they'll charge you 35 cents, 40 cents. That's kind of crazy. You know what I mean? It's kind of crazy to pay 40 cents for a $1,000 Lightning Network transaction. Like, and they have to make money and they're doing what they're doing. But like, that's a lot. And when you use the non-custodial, the fees are a lot, man. They are way higher. I A/B tested all of them, as opposed to something like Speed or Blink, where, what is it, like 13 sats? It was like nothing, So there's definitely pros and cons, and there's pros and cons to everything, right? Like if I have money in a bank account that's not mine, I can like use Venmo. I can use some layer two fiat system, right? Because I'm there and I have a certain amount of risk. And then I can have $1,000 in my pocket and someone can beat the shit out of me on the A train. And I can lose that, right? And there's other kinds of risks. So I don't think that it's winner take all. I don't think that the average person will be able to, with right now, currently the way that it's set up, I don't think the average person is going to be able to manage a non-custodial wallet. And nor do I think that the average person even really cares. I mean, do people really care? That's the question. I don't like sending payments into Strike, because at the end of the year you get a 1099 div or whatever, a 1099B from Strike that basically says, hey, you deposited money, you sent money, and then you have to report a cost basis. So I would prefer to just avoid that. But can you sleep at night? If you have a few dollars on some of these exchanges that have perfect Lightning UI UX experiences, I think so. until it really gets to a point where it's, and then you look at Aqua, right? Aqua's going the opposite route. They're really doing everything with Liquid. And I think Misty Breeze, the new Misty Breeze wallet, is the same way. But I don't know. What do you think, man?
I mean, personally, it's like everything has trade-offs, right? Like you know, you use Bitcoin if you want to have unconfiscatable, unfuckable money. You use Bitcoin layer one. If you want to send really large amounts of money, you use Bitcoin layer one. If you want to store that money for a long period of time and sleep soundly at night, knowing that nobody is going to rug pull you, you use Bitcoin layer one. When I use Bitcoin layer twos, I don't care as much. Like the first Lightning node I set up was the Raspi Blitz node. Like right when I started getting into Bitcoin, like I was, you know, doing command line and stuff, felt really cool. But it's tricky, right? And obviously there's a lot of easier implementations to do that now. You know, I have various things. I use a Albi hub for one of them. It's still like, you know, I'm paying them like a monthly fee, and somehow I still have to manage my liquidity on there, which is annoying, and channels are getting closed and whatnot. And I'm like, this is a tear, but like, I just want to use a custodial thing. Cause I'm not using this for massive amounts. I'm literally using this for like zaps on Noster, for paying for stuff. If I'm ordering something online and I want to pay in Bitcoin, for using it at conferences. So I'm not putting any super meaningful amount of money on there. I'm putting a small amount. It's, you know, like, you know, an amount that I would potentially carry in my wallet that I'd be comfortable, you know, if somebody, I don't know where the A train is, but if somebody, you know, beats the shit out of me on the A train, that's what I have it for. I love the user experience of Aqua. Aqua is super nice. I use Liquid a decent amount, for various things. Cause I think it works really well. It's weird to me that more people don't use it. Obviously that has its trade-offs too, right? That's a federation. It's everything's a different trust model. It's like, you've also got eCash, you know, on Cashew. Like that's another different trust model. That's another opportunity for you to potentially get rugged, but you're making a trade-off because you also get near perfect privacy, and you've got in like offline payments. You've got instant, you know, basically instant settlement. Like it's really, really cool. It works super, super well. And it's so private, but there's trade-offs. So for me, it's like, it all comes down to what you need, right? And it's like different trade-offs for different purposes. You always have the Bitcoin base layer to fall back on when you want to have something that is uncensorable, unconfiscatable, unfuckable. That's what Bitcoin layer one is for. For everything else, I'm willing to accept those trade-offs because I'm not talking like I don't need the same things out of layer two that I need out of layer one Bitcoin. Those are just, they're different needs for me. I am curious. I want to ask you just to clarify. So you said the custodial wallets that you were using were cheaper transaction fee wise or more expensive than the self-custodial, the non-custodial wallets you were using?
100%. No, 100% cheaper, and actually, in a lot of times, like nearly free, maybe free. If you use Speed Wallet and you make a Lightning transaction, there's a more than likely chance that when you look at the fee after you send it, the fee will be zero. Like many times, it's zero, right? If it's a small amount, it's a very small amount. But when you send from River or Zeus or Phoenix or these other wallets, you're going to pay what seemed to me is a significant fee, you know, and Rivers varies for Lightning, right? For Lightning is like nearly free, an instant, like what, 35 cents, you know, one time it was like $1.10, and it was a Lightning transaction. But, you know, again, just what you're saying about like on chain, I mean, when the mempool is empty, you know, one sat per V byte, I'll die on this hill. The thing is like Speed Wallet, for example, I went to make a sizable, right? Like maybe a 0.2 deposit, off of Speed Wallet. And the fee was fucking $200. I had to like wipe my eyes. So it's like, I can use Speed Wallet custodial for nearly free. And it's beautiful, wonderful experience. And then you go to make an on-chain payment and they charge you 1%. So that's like, then it's like, you know, and that's truth. That's the way that it is. And you know, okay, I'll go back to using Blockstream Green. I don't think it's called Blockstream Green anymore, but that was the best mobile wallet for on-chain was the Blockstream Green. I think they rebranded it. I haven't used it in a little while. But like when you send from when you send from your Trezor or when you send from the hardware wallet at home, you specify the fee, the dynamic fee estimation, one fee per byte. That's what I want to pay. I'm a cheap son of a bitch. I'm going to pay $200.
Yeah, that's insane. That's worse than fiat. Wait, you mentioned River, but Rivers is custodial, is it not? I mean, you're talking about just using Lightning to transfer.
Rivers
off?
Is custodial, but River is a business, and you know every week we do.
Okay,
so
you lumped it in with the non-custodial ones. That's why I was clarifying. So you're just saying those are the River one was on the expensive side, at the same level as some of the non-custodial ones, whereas some of these custodial options, if you're doing Lightning, they have these massive fat channels that are open. The liquidity, like you sending a couple $100 through that, you know, through that one Bitcoin channel doesn't even move the needle. And so it's super cheap. That's what you're getting at, right?
I'm getting at that, but I'm also getting at River used to be nearly free, right? When they like Uber, how Uber used to be like really cheap. And now it's like, fucking, I pay more for the Uber than I did for the flight. You know what I mean? Like that type of deal. So, you know, and God bless River and they're an amazing company and all. But like Lightning Ventures, we do our payroll every Friday. Some people get paid in Bitcoin. You know, we have our corporate account with River, which is great experience, love River. But when I make those Lightning payments every week, I can't help but look, you know, if somebody's getting payroll and it costs me $1.30 to do a Lightning transaction for his payroll that week, it used to be free. I mean, it used to be zero. It would be free with something like Speed Wallet, right? And then you go to Strike, and Strike gives you zero, no fee for an on-chain withdrawal, you know? It's free if you're willing to wait the 24-hour, like, no rush, whatever period, send it when you do the next batch. It's zero. It's free. So it's just all of these exchanges and things, they all have different flavors and they all have different features.
It's different strokes for different folks, right? I mean, it is amazing that we have so many options. We have so many options. Like that's I've got a Lightning wallet folder on my phone that's got like, I don't know, like 15 different ones in there that I've played around with, like pretty much all of them, I think. And it's cool to have options. Like I've got my ones that are kind of my go-tos, but it's nice. There's a ton of different ones popping up. I think we'll start do you think we'll still see a lot more proliferation of different wallets and, you know, services around this? Like, are you guys looking at the ARC stuff at all too? Is that something you think is going to be blended into a lot of these Lightning wallets that it'll just be like, so they'll be kind of dual purpose, you'll have multiple options? How do you see that happening?
I think they have a solution and they're going to be in Lugano. There should be a pretty cool demo and news or whatever, but I think they have a unified QR code that works. But you know, it's hard to just actually like, it's hard to just keep up with everything going on in Bitcoin, you know, things that are out there that everyone's using, start thinking about these new things that are kind of on the cutting edge. But I mean, I love that team and I love them. But I'm also in the camp that like Lightning works and it works great. Okay. I mean, there's all these different things. There's a million ways to use it in an optimal way and suboptimal, depending on like what's important to you. But I like my payments to go through, right? But I also have a start nine at home. I have a start nine at home and I would rather just do the hardware wallet, and not really do a complex multi-sig, you know, and I just don't need that. Like, it's just not for me, but there's just so many options right now for people that it has to kind of just work magically. You know, if you had to go into a command line to send an email, it wouldn't work. You know, I think we're getting there. I just think that it's a lot for a new person to come in and you don't want to get scared off with BIP,
do you
whatever.
Think we're still pretty early on the UX side of things in terms of like what?
Oh, dude, big time. Big time early. I mean, it's gotta be simple. It's gotta be simplified.
And I think a lot of that's just like, you know, you've seen like, I think that, I mean, that was a big thing that Aqua was pushing for, right? We brought up theirs earlier. They were pushing for, how do we make this? Like, I think, what was their tagline? Something like the Bitcoin wallet for your grandma, like, you know, bring it back to the old grandma. Like, can your grandma figure this out? And I think that's like it's a good goal, especially on the payment side. Like, grandma figuring out like self-custody, and that may be a little bit, you know, a little bit trickier, but it's like, maybe grandma doesn't need to, you know, like, I don't know. I go back and forth on that. I want to be conscious of your time here, Muzz, but was there anything we didn't get a chance to talk about with regard to either like the investing you do, your portfolio companies, anything like that? I'll just remind people again, if you're, you know, if you're still listening, go and check out Plan B Week. It was planbweek.com, right? Planbweek.com. If you want to get involved in this pitch competition in Lugano, and if you are in Lugano, come say hello. Carl and I will be there. Let's go have a beer. Muzz, we're going to need to have some beers. But yeah, anything else we should cover?
No, that's it. So if you're interested in learning about investing in Bitcoin startups, you can get the skinny at ltng.ventures. You can sign up the form there. We'll send you an invite to join our group and all that good stuff. If you're working on something cool, go ahead and fill out the form as a builder or a founder, whatever. That's really cool too. Maybe there's portfolio companies or something we can do to help you out in one way or another. And we also just launched thunderfunder.com, which is a Reg CF equity crowdfunding portal. So not like Geyser where people are donating, but sort of retail investors that don't have to meet any kind of accreditation for Thunder Funder. And we are going to be firing up some really cool deals on there. So that's it. That's all I'm interested in doing.
All right, man. Love it. Well, appreciate you coming on here. Stoked to see you in Lugano. And yeah, until then, let's keep playing with lightning wallets, huh?
You got it, man.
All right. Take it easy, Muzz.
Thanks.
And that's a wrap on this Bitcoin Talk episode of the Bitcoin Podcast. Remember to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're watching or listening, and share it with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet. Find me on Noster at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes to grab sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Bitcoin is scarce, but podcasts are abundant. So thank you for spending your scarce time listening to the Bitcoin Podcast. Until next time, stay free.